Great to be with you today and to have this time of celebration. It's a week for me where I'm kind of holding together death and resurrection in a different way, in that my Aunt Carol died just last Wednesday. And so Friday we participated in the service in Pittsburgh, and then Dorothy and I will leave this afternoon to go to Pinto, Maryland for her burial on Monday. And Carol grew up with Snooky here, and I don't know, maybe they had the same sort of troubling spirit, I don't know. But Carol was one of the fixed points in my life outside of my parents. But Dad died way back in 1990, and Mom died now 6 years ago, seven, it'll be seven this year. Anyway, so it really marks an end of an era in a sense, because we don't have many, well, nobody in that generation, maybe Doris is, is still alive, and your mother, but did she grow? No, your mom, no. Sorry, I'm jumping to another place entirely. So anyway, so the point is, I'm holding my stuff together as best I can. I feel a little bit like our flowers that we stole from our son and daughter-in-law's house last night. We crept over in the darkness and clipped. I drove Dorothy over and you know, I kept the truck running and she dashed up. That's not really true. I dramatized it a bit. But the trail was falling all along the way and it continues to fall here. So the evidence is all there. But the thing is, when I think about these passages and I think about what is going on in this story, I find that this is a fitting passage. It's consistent with how Luke is. And Luke, we've been following passages in Luke over the Lenten period. And we finished up on Maundy Thursday evening. And now we skipped over all of the things that happened during Holy Week, in a sense. We made very few references to the particular events, but we get to this new point, and in our reading this morning, there are a number of things that take place. First of all, it identifies Joseph, who, though a member of the council, had not agreed to their plan in action. So what's that saying? What's going on here? Who is Joseph? Or what is Joseph? Joseph validates the voices of dissent. It recognizes that even those who were in authority didn't all agree. And he acted on his dissent. He acted on his disagreement with those, that broader authority. Then the story goes on. And he was waiting expectantly for the kingdom of God. Who does that remind you of? Or it's sort of a foreshadowing of somebody that lived in Caesarea in a few chapters later in Acts. Who invites Peter to come up? Cornelius. Talking about Cornelius, who, though not a Jew, he was recognized as righteous. So we're getting in this territory with Luke where he tries to hold together all of these different pieces. There are those who are enthusiastic followers. There are those who are quiet supporters. There are those who are disenfranchised, but they're the ones who understand. And that's consistent through this chapter here. So, or this section here. So Joseph takes the body of Christ and wraps it, puts it in a tomb. The women follow, and they're identified as Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of James, which is presumably Jesus' mother, right? And one other woman, Joanna. Now, I don't know her very well. I don't really recognize her right off. So it's something I want to look up. But anyway, those three women follow Joseph to the tomb. So they know where he's been taken. It doesn't say that anybody else went there. Is that strange to you? It's kind of strange, but what to me it is, at least. But what Luke is doing is he's highlighting the fact that the ones who were going to stand up, you know, who had stood up and chopped somebody's ear off there when Jesus was arrested? Peter. You know, pompous Peter, not this Peter. This is a very humble, soon-to-be father. And, you know, not this kind of arrogant Peter. But that Peter, anyway, Peter the naked fisherman, that one, he chops the ear off, and Jesus has to reproach him even during his arrest. So the people who are hot-headed and impulsive are the men, except for Joseph, who is a person in authority who's backing the power. He's a dissenter, and he's the one who's faithful, and he's not hiding. And Mary and the others go to the tomb or see where he's buried. And then they respect the law. They respect the commandments. They prepare the spices and the herbs for treating the body of Jesus. And they go on the first day of the week at early dawn. They went to the tomb, taking the spices that they had prepared. They found the stone rolled away from the tomb. When they went in, they did not find the body. While they were perplexed, later on, Peter is amazed at what happened. While they were perplexed about this, suddenly two men in dazzling clothes stood beside them. The women were terrified and bowed their faces to the ground. But the men said to them, "Why do you look for the living among the dead? He is not here, but he's risen." Now, a little bit ago, I referred to, it's nice to have Ted here and Ken here and me, three, and Jan is on the screen here. So we're recently somewhat handicapped, you know. And for me, the handicap is that I'm not supposed to carry even the equivalent of a gallon of milk for 4 to 6 weeks, so another 3 to 6 weeks. And do you know how hard it is to remember that simple bit of information? It's horrific. You know, a suitcase doesn't weigh 10 pounds, does it? Of course it does. But, well, I was only moving it from here to here. And I didn't really lift up. All I did was rotate. We need to be reawoken time after time. Because even when the instructions are clear, our tendency is to ignore them or find a loophole. I won't mention Ted's loophole. And that is, Ted, now after his stroke, he can't see very well out of his right eye. I'm blind in my left eye. He's blind now. Yeah, together. Two eyes, and neither of us can see, you know. At any rate, Ted there, you know, which side? Now, how much you see out of your left eye? Pretty good. How many fingers am I holding? Three. Okay. I was afraid you couldn't see that. You know, this guy thought, since he was a truck driver all those years ago, and he had a little mirror on his rearview mirror on the right, he thought if he put it on his car, he could drive now. I'll leave it alone from there. You can ask Snooki for the gory details. She made me promise not to say anything, which is not true. She didn't make me promise. But, you know, Ted needs reminders, you know? Stick your nose everywhere, everywhere, you know? We need help. The faith community is a community because we all need help, right? The thing I like about this story here is that the women there go to the place, they know where he's buried, they go there, and they go to do their thing. They receive the word, why are you looking among the living, or among the dead for the living? And then they go back on that testimony alone and share it with the disciples. And Peter, this translation, for me, there's more doubt in it than this, you know? Because Peter, he's the impetuous, you know, fighter type, cuts an ear off, you know? He's unlike this Peter. I'm sorry. I don't know what we can call him to distinguish from you. Petros, yeah, Petros there. Anyway, he is not easily convinced. He has to be an eyewitness himself here. So to me, yes, he believed in a sense, but once again, just like Mary, when she was told she's going to have a child, she has to run and see Elizabeth. Why? Because Elizabeth is with child as well, and that's what the angels had told her. So she goes and she verifies. Peter goes now back to the tomb. He verifies. It reminds us of so many stories where there's direct encounter with Jesus, and then the person immediately goes and shares that. So the Samaritan woman, she goes, and all the people from the town come. Why? Because they wanted to see for themselves. We believed before because she had told us, but now we've seen it face to face. The thing that's interesting here is that as we come to the end of Luke, in these stories, what we've, over the Lenten period, the thing that we've seen is that the people who see, people who understand who Jesus is and what God is doing, are blind, children, women, but they're not the authorities, the people in leadership. It's not till here that we get one of the people in leadership who is affirmed for his descent. Isn't that interesting? Now, some of the Pharisees had warned Jesus, they're trying to kill you, and so on and so forth. But for the most part, there's consistent opposition to the Pharisees and so forth. And Jesus is in their faces, is confronting them, is defying them. So the ones who understand are the ones who are disenfranchised, the ones who follow are the ones who are disenfranchised. The ones who think they know are the ones who don't know. That's how it is. So what are we invited to? The thing that I want to say is that we need, just like Ken just finished saying, what was the phrase you said? Awakening. You know, when we think we know, that's usually when we fail. Yesterday, Dorothy and I, for a few minutes, less than 10, started listening to a book that's of interest to me, but boring as heck on the road. And It's about important conversations. And Stephen Covey is the narrator, if you know him at all. But anyway, he said, he gave a quote at the beginning of this book saying that the surest invitation to failure is success. Something to that effect. That's a paraphrase. But what he was saying is that people who are focused on their own success and their own victory, their own accomplishment, become convinced that staying the course. How many presidents have we had that said, stay the course? You know, we've had lots of presidents. And what does staying the course often lead to? Bad decisions, failure, breakdown. Because what worked today, you know, sure, I could say, look, I moved that suitcase Thursday or Friday morning, Dorothy. I did it Friday morning. Now I can't even put my hand on the pole. I moved it Friday morning and there was no damage done. Well, it's true. The thing is, we don't even know when we're doing the damage, you know? It's just we're impacted by it. And then we have to respond not to what we would like to do, but to how we protect ourselves from further damage. So it's a distortion of our best vision. We succeed when we're thinking clearly about what's ahead and we've got a clear vision for the future. Now, what does this have to do with the resurrection? The thing about Jesus is in his teaching, in his modeling, beginning of Luke, it talks about him coming out being anointed to preach, to teach, and to heal. And immediately they want to kill him. 23 chapters later, they succeed, but then he's raised. But all along the way, what did he do? But it's not as though he didn't adapt. Jesus stuck with his vision, but he adapted all along the way. And he was constantly in a mode of teaching. And what were the aspects of his teaching? When you think of Jesus, how does he describe himself? When he's with his disciples that last evening, I'm the one who serves. When he was the healer, even he healed the ear of the one who was arresting him. He didn't limit his healing to only those who believed in him. His service was to all people. His recognition was to disenfranchise people. He came to save the lost. If you see yourself as being found, you're most likely lost, you know? So Jesus, in many, many ways, is that piece of us, that piece of God that calls out and calls us back to walking with him. And walking with Jesus means that we're a healing presence in the world, we're a serving presence in the world, and we point people to God. So as we walk in the light, let us walk in the light. May we be a blessing to those around us. May we communicate God's grace and love that we've received and experienced through Jesus. And may we draw all people to God's self.